Our first question today is a nice and easy. When was the last time you helped someone?
Yesterday, I did
Paris dishes. Woo! Great job, Luke.
Every second of every day.
Yeah, you have children, right? Well, and then also, when was the last time you helped someone, like, outside of your...
intimacy zone.
Yeah, your intimacy zone, I guess. That's a good word, yeah.
As a teacher.
Yes.
I think that counts. It's in the zone.
Yeah.
You get paid for it.
Yeah. One of my biggest pet peeves with my students, I will say, is when they say, I need help. And I'm like, with what? Like, you can't just say, I need help. You haven't even read the directions. Go away, child. Sorry. I will tell you, on Wednesday of last week, one of my coworkers really loves Celsius, like the energy drink, their favorite beverage in the world. And on Wednesdays, we get snack cart. But if you're not at the snack cart in the morning, there's a very good chance that you're not getting what it was. And there were Celsius there. So I grabbed her one. And you should have seen her. Like, so excited.
Yesterday, we were at a mall. And I got smoothies. And the smoothie that came out in front of me was for the people who had ordered, but they didn't realize it was there. And they let it sit there for like 5 minutes. I'm like, I think that's your smoothie.
Good job.
I think that helps.
That does help, because they were just off somewhere else.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I mean, it shouldn't be this hard to think about somebody I might have helped, you know? And it is.
All right, cool. Well, that's kind of today's message. All right, we're going to be looking at Matthew 25. And just kind of some real quick context. So Matthew 23, we have the narrative shifting in tone. And that's where the seven woes to the Pharisees come from. And, like, Jesus is really going kind of on the attack. Matthew 24 is how to wait for God, be ready. Like, the kingdom is coming, you need to be ready. And so is Matthew 25, we have the consequences of our actions of being ready or not being ready. We have the parable of the 10 virgins, the parable of the talents, and then we're going to be right here today, which I didn't put up, but and then Matthew 26 starts the crucifixion narrative, right? So this is the last, like, thing Jesus, like, speaks to people before the crucifixion narrative, right? Before we get into Holy Week and everything. So we're going to look at Matthew 25, 31 through 46, which is commonly called the parable of the sheep and the goats. But that's kind of a misnomer, because it's not really a parable. There is a simile in it, and then that's it, right? And then the rest is just, this is what will happen. So it's not really a parable, but you've probably heard it called that. All right. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people from one another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Now, if you have pictures of goats, like in my head that I have, or sheep and goats, you're like, that's easy. Sheep are white, goats are not. Like, or, you know, but it's really not, because they kept them all together. Sheep and goats were kept together. And, like, I know pretty much every culture has this, but yes, right is favor, left is disfavor, right? So the sheep are favored. So we're going to play a quick game called Spot the Goats. Underneath your paper, there is a picture. Circle all the goats in your picture. When you are certain you have circled all of the goats and none of the sheep, stand up. Fastest wins. Oh, and Kelly, here's a picture for you so you can play too.
I can't
even
identify all the
individuals.
They're all not the same.
Okay,
they all have different pictures. Picture. They all have different pictures.
So what you're saying is we're not allowed to cheat?
Yeah.
That is my picture.
Oh, there you go. I don't have any goats. I'm going to stand up.
I think
I was first.
I was first.
I'm probably wrong, though.
I know. I'm probably wrong, too.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm kind of
there's
a
too many.
Yeah,
that's a goat right there.
It's impossible.
That's gonna go. Look at that skin. That coat.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was a goat right big in the front.
I don't know.
Anyway, all right.
Enhance.
then that's a go. If we're going by faces, they're good.
No, I want to know, did I get them all? Wait, go ahead, Kelly. What'd you say?
Is it wrong that I'm like, okay, on my picture, I feel as though all the goats are not white?
Okay. The answer is, I have no idea. I know that's going to irritate people like Tracy. I don't have an answer key. Right? Like, I do not have an answer key. My point for this was, it's a lot harder than you think to separate sheep and goats. Right? You have to know what a sheep, you have to know the difference between a sheep and a goat. And shepherds did separate... Yeah, there you go. But yeah, but you have to be able to see them up close, right? Same thing with Jesus knows the sheep and the goats. But a shepherd keeps all of the sheep and goats together, and the sheep are not responsible for getting rid of the goats, right? Very similar to the parable of the wheat and the weeds, right?
Yeah.
The sheep, that's not the sheep's job, right? The sheep's job is to follow the shepherd. So we're going to keep reading, but that's why I just wanted to show you that it's harder than you think to separate sheep and goats. Unless you have very, very clear pictures or you have very white sheep.
Or you're there in person.
Or you're there in person,
I'm
yes.
just sitting here with CAPTCHA and I'm like, I'm not human in this. I'm just doing all.
Human robot.
There you go. All right. Then the king will say to those on his right, come you who are blessed by my father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? So I'm just going to start with a really basic question. What do the righteous do? What do the sheep do?
Take care of each other.
No, take care of other people.
Yeah, but be more specific.
I don't say lesser people, but take care of those in need.
Take care of those. Well, yes, but I'm real specific. I was hungry.
They answer the needs.
You gave me something to eat. What else?
Thirsty.
To get something to drink. Thirsty.
Stranger.
Clothes. Invited in.
Clothed you.
Good. And this is the reason I want to do this is I really wanted to point out as well. When they were thirsty, did they give them clothes? Right? When they were in prison, you know, like, that's not a great one. But like, you know, did they give, they answered the need. Right? It wasn't just, here, I have a bunch. You're not hungry at all, but I've got a bunch of food that I can give to you. And I know what you really need is like a friendly person to sit with you for a while. But I don't have time, so here's some bread, right? Like, they answered the need, and I think that's really important here, right? Because it's very easy to, like, donate by, like, getting rid of things you don't need, right? And you can feel good about yourself, right? Ha! I am awesome. I donated all these things. But then it's kind of like the stories of, like, because sometimes when they don't sell at thrift stores, they get, you know, sent overseas, and people in Kenya getting prom dresses, right? That's not exactly a high need of the population. So it's giving people, they gave what they needed. And I think that's a really important part. And then the king says, the king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. So who did they bless? Who did they give it to?
Right.
Well, yes, but like I'm being really annoying. Specifically from the text, who did they give it to?
Least of brothers.
Yeah, the least of these brothers and sisters of mine. And now this becomes like, people kind of will get in the weeds here and be like, okay, so the brothers and sisters of Christ, God has specifically defined as followers of him, right? And that's who you're doing it for, right? But it's also important to note that they are just as surprised. Like, they don't realize they're doing it for brothers and sisters in Christ. Like, it's not a call to only bless Christians, right? Because those are the brothers and sisters. You're supposed to bless everyone regardless of, you know, you don't know who they are. And here's a quote from R.T. France that says, as far as they were concerned, it was simply an act of kindness to a fellow human being in need, not an expression of their attitude toward Jesus. And I think that's an important thing because yes, the text says, you know, you're doing this to the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, which means follower of God. But they had no idea. They're like, when did we do that? We just kind of did it. And of course, like, it's also the same thing, very similar. Jesus identifies himself with his followers, Paul, right? When Paul finds Jesus, it is not, Jesus doesn't say, why are you persecuting my church to Paul? He says, why are you persecuting me? And so he very much, Jesus identifies himself with his followers, always, right? How you treat Jesus's followers is how you treat Jesus. And that includes yourself. I know for a long time when I had my depression, I had self-hatred, so I did not treat myself well. And it took me too long to realize that that is how I was treating Jesus as well. So, all right, now we're going to continue. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me. They also will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or needing clothes or sick or in prison and did not help you? He will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. Then they will go away to eternal punishment, but the righteousness to eternal life. So, why are these people cursed?
Because they didn't help people who weren't in front of them.
Yes, they are cursed for what they didn't do. And I think that's really important because I feel like the Christian church in general really puts a lot of emphasis on the sins that you can do, right? Don't have sex. Don't drink too much alcohol. Don't gamble away your life savings, etc. Don't lie. But Jesus, this is his last little thing to people. And he's saying they are cursed for what they didn't do, not for what they did. And I think in modern America, this is a really big one because we can all be comfortable. And like, I can quote unquote follow Christ and never leave my home, right? And just stay home and enjoy my TV and my dog, and I don't have to interact with the world. And this also reminds me, there's this country song that came out a few years ago called What He Didn't Do. And it's a breakup song, but she says in the end it wasn't what he did, but it's what he didn't do. And it's one of my favorites. I just love because it's true. It's the lack of action that often causes problems. Right? When you think of relationships, outside of relationships that have a gigantic big blow up, a lot of times they end because people aren't doing things. You're no longer calling or texting or reaching out and saying, hey, I miss you, I want to hang out. Or you're not inviting them and they're not inviting you, and you're just kind of like, well, they can pick up the phone too, right? There are times, yes, of course, there'll be a big argument. But think about your relationships that have ended or who you don't talk to all the time. It's usually just because nobody's doing anything. It's not because you're mad at them or they're mad at you. It's just they didn't do it. And I think this passage should convict us as we were talking this morning about the last time we helped someone that, you know, isn't right in front of us or, you know, in our circle of intimacy, right? Like, where are we helping people? What are we? And there are some things that we do globally, like, and as a church, like, we do give to those in need, but there's also this call of, like, people are hungry, and are we feeding them? And then, of course, there's the meme that goes around, like, that I've seen several times, that I was hungry and you cut my food stamps, right? Which is a very active doing, right? And so I think that one also can make, that meme, right, can make us feel good about ourselves really easily because, like, well, I didn't support that bill that's going to cut food stamps, right? I didn't do that. But again, this is all about what you're not doing. Go ahead, Luke.
I think it's interesting because a lot of these are filling physical needs, but there's also the I was sick or in prison and you visited me. So there is not just a physical giving, but also a giving of presence.
Yes, that is actually, I was going to mention that either earlier, later, but I'll go that. I think that's really important too, because I think in our society today, more often people need presence. Then they need, like, there are people in America that need food. I'm not trying to, but there, I think there's more often people who are in prison and don't even know it, right? Like, maybe they're... The reason cults and conspiracy theories and things get attractive, gangs, is because they give a place of belonging to people. And then people say, like, well, then I was trapped and I couldn't get out, right? But people are searching for belonging. People want, like, that presence, that choosing to spend time with someone who is maybe, you know, quote unquote, in prison of their mind. And yes, going to visit people in prison is also important because that's the people that our society tries to prevent doesn't exist more than any other group, I would argue. But it is that companionship, that visiting someone when they're sick or in prison, whether it's a prison of loneliness, a metaphorical prison of their own making, or a real prison, matters. And that companionship, right? Like, that matters. And I think that's the harder one. It's a lot easier to be like, here's a glass of water. I'm done. Like, I checked off my Matthew 20.
There's the will.
Yeah, right? I checked off my Matthew 25 for the day. Good job, me. Right? But to be with people who are in pain or who are lonely, it's kind of, it reminds me of the parable, or not the parable, sorry, the story of the woman at the well. And she says, if you would have asked, I could have given you living water. Right? And it's just so, that's just so beautiful. So yes. And then one of the things I also want to point out about this passage is one of the themes of Matthew is just in from Matthew 16, 27 is Jesus will repay every person according to what they have done. That is one of the things Matthew, like, really hits on. Like, your actions in this world have consequences for the next. But it's not saying salvation isn't about a Jesus prayer, but rather living as someone who follows God's will. That's what Matthew 25 is. If you're not helping people like God has called you to, if you're not living the way Jesus has instructed, then you can't pretend like you're following Christ. Right? That is the call here. And too often, America has preached Jesus as a get-out-of-hell-free card instead of a you-need-to-change-your-entire-life. When Jesus defines the kingdom of heaven, the very first words are repent, right? Which means to change your ways. And so I want you to think about, who are you withholding from? This could be maybe it's someone in your life. You're like, I don't really want to spend time with you anymore. Or maybe it's like, look, I don't want to have to give anymore. But who are you withholding from? And I'm going to, like, leave this open for, I just want to give everybody a minute or 2 minutes and just really think about this. And maybe it's, you know, someone you don't know. Maybe you're just withholding resources or the homeless person on the street. But who are you withholding from? Think about the first century Christians. Which side of this would they have identified with? Because it's a very Western privileged reading where we are looking at this as the provider. Like, the early church would have been the naked, the imprisoned, the sick, the hungry, right? Like, they were the poor. And I think, and I can't even really wrap my hand around this parable to understand it. I was trying last night, and I was like, I can't even wrap my head around that when I was reading that commentary, because I'm so used to reading it this way,
yeah.
Right? Like, and they would have been hungry, and yet they still gave people to eat. Like, in fact, the early church was known for, it wasn't just about giving food. Like, when there was someone who doesn't have enough food, the congregation would just be like, okay, today's your day to fast, and everyone else is going to eat. This is their day to fast, and everyone else is going to eat. And, like, that's how they spread the wealth, right? And shared and honored each other.
Share the need as well as
the... Yes, share the need as well as the things. And, like, that's also the thing is not being too prideful as well, right? When you need something to ask for it, right? I think that's also an important thing. Like, Lou talks about this a lot, that sometimes people need to be needed. And, like, I think it's so easy to live a life where you don't need things, right? But, like, it is a blessing to let people help you. And it took me a long time. And now that I know that, like, I'm way more willing to let people help me than I was before. And, like, because I also realized, like, allowing someone to help me isn't saying that I can't do it, right? It's just saying that it is easy. Like, many hands make light work. And also, it blesses people. When you let people help you, it blesses them. That's just a reality, right? Like, I can think of a small one. Like, I mean, I love babysitting Luke Morgan's kids, right? And they're like, yeah, thank you. And I'm like, oh, I mean, I just got to hang out with children for an hour. And I was like, and like, they think I'm the coolest person ever. Like, that doesn't happen very often. So, like, but it's a blessing to me, right? And that need. We're wired, right? We're doing things when we actually do them. Like, it feels good to do good things, right? And so, like, that, I think, is also a very important part in this. Again, I wish I had a stronger... It's really hard for me to wrap my head around this. Like, right? To, like, think about this because, right, the least of these would have been the church. And now we're not the least of these necessarily in America. Yes.
I think that kind of underscores, by reversing it like that, it's really kind of a good thing, but it underscores how come it's so hard for us to think about who do I help outside, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
To answer the original question, because we're so self-contained, and we, you know, and another thing I see in too, you're talking about, it was also protection. The Christian,
mm-hmm.
the early church needed protection from, you know,
mm-hmm.
so
mm-hmm.
they did need that.
Yeah, and the way, like, one of the Roman emperors, and you'll have to forgive me, I forget which one, he was, well, he has this great quote where he's a pagan, right, very much, and he's talking about the Christians and how they are taking care of the poor and the sick, and he goes, and they don't even just take care of their poor and sick, they're taking care of ours, so people are, you know, converting to Christianity, and he's really upset about it, like, these people are taking care of everyone.
They're doing good things
and
for them.
Yeah. But, like, again, it is that, like, when we're doing that with a general, you know, like, it's not, I'm not giving you water to drink so that you will become a Christian, right? But I am giving you water to drink, and because I'm sharing, you think about, like, a hot desert climate, I'm sharing water with you, right?
That I may not have more of.
Like, that, it sparks something. So what, and I would say what most people don't have more of today is time. Right? Like, I'm giving you my time. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big deal. Like, that's the stranger and you invited me in, that's welcoming. Right? And so I think that's an important part as well, is when we give what we don't have, and what we feel like we don't have, I should say. I think that's also a really important part of this. And to also let ourselves receive, right? Because you're letting, if I'm hungry and you give me something to eat, like, I'm letting you bless Jesus.
Yes.
And that is not to say that you get to, like, you know, stay the child forever and be like, look, I'm just letting everyone bless Jesus by feeding me, giving me water, and, like, taking care of me. You have to grow up, right? it's a reciprocal relationship, right? That's what it should look like. And it is intentionally giving things, right? And it is being intentional with resources. And so I think it's really important. And I think it's important to remember that, like, again, they are cursed for what they didn't do. In Luke, he has the parable of Lazarus, right? And Lazarus, this is not the Lazarus raised from the dead. This is the rich man and Lazarus. And the rich man just ignores Lazarus day in and day out. And then the rich man in this parable, again, goes to hell. And Lazarus goes to heaven. And he's like, have Lazarus just dip like a finger and stuff. And it's like, well, Lazarus got what, you know, you had your nice things this side of heaven, and you ignored him. And it's the fact, and I can just imagine the rich man going about his life day in and day out and not even noticing Lazarus, right? Lazarus was there begging, and, you know, it's kind of like the blinders. There's this story I read in, I want to say high school, and this Aboriginal person, for whatever reason, was in New York with someone, and, like, he's like, oh, stop, because he hears something, and he, like, picks up a cricket from the bush, and, like, he's like, you know, this is so cool. The guy was like, how did you hear that and all this noise? And then he said, because you hear what matters to you, and he drops a bunch of coins on the ground. You can tell this is dated, but, like, he drops a bunch of coins on the ground, and everybody stops and starts and looks at the coins to see if they drop that. And it's like, you hear what you notice, right? Like, and you know, what's important to you. And that, I think, is also another thing, because it, again, it's what they didn't do. And I think we ignore sins of omission more often than sins of commission. So here's my next question, not just who are you withholding from, because that's like kind of, that kind of makes, you know, that hits you a little differently. But who do you need to give water, food, or companionship, or clothing, or whatnot? But who do you need to, who in your life, right, would benefit from something? You know, is there someone on your way to work every day, you see the exact same person asking for money, you know, or is there someone in your life that you know is lonely and has been really struggling, or who just seems lonely? You?
No, I was just going to do an example.
Go ahead.
Way back in November, we had our hot water heater go out, and we came to church after that, and we talked about it, and I said I didn't know what to do at the time, and Winston said you could call, you know, he goes like this, call me, and I said, but I don't have your phone number. Well, Winston made a point of getting my phone and putting the number in it for me, so if it came up, I could call him. Now, to me, that was huge. I mean, I will call him. You know, I won't abuse it, but I definitely will call him, you know, because of what he did. And that's been, what, 6 months? I mean, that's a giving thing that happened. It's lasted for 6 months, because I often think about it.
Yeah.
Because I have said it before, and they just didn't give me the number.
Yeah.
I think that this is really kind of hard, because there isn't anybody that you, even in our household, there's so much more I could be giving, you know, and things get taken for granted. And it's like, you want to kind of shore up your helm first, you know, that kind of seems, and it's readily available to you. And I don't really know people in an outreach that to do that, companionship is the only thing I've really got to offer anybody, you know?
But I feel like that's probably the greater need in America.
Yeah, okay. I'll put a sign-up sheet in. Don't forget.
No.
You
go up to somebody and you say, hey, Anna, you want to come over for dinner? Like, that, you don't put up, like, a sign-up sheet is a cheap way out of it. Like, you have to be intentional.
I know, that was
that. You have to be intentional. Like, you know, when you look at someone and you go, who are they hanging out with, right? Who is there? And, like, it can be people in the church, right? Like, you know, when is the last time you hung out with this person, right? Or that you, you know, truly checked on them. Or was just, like, invited them to do something, whatever it was, right? And then think of, like, so that might be people in the church, right? Very easily. Or, like, then go, like, your coworkers, you know? I mean, I know everybody's work is different, but, like, coworkers or, you know, your neighbors or what have you. Like, what do you actually know about them and what they need? Because that's a big thing.
Well, one thing that's kind of struck me out of this is that Kelly,
Tapita.
For the first time, you know, from early on in meeting her, I was always impressed by that. And hospice I was so grateful for hospice and when we needed it. And I'm thinking, okay, you know what? That's something I could do. I wouldn't be sad about it. To me, it would be I would love to give that. So there you go. People can it's like a good companionship,
yeah.
Too.
Drop on the phone in 2002.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And you can also look at this. What do you need that you haven't asked for? Oh. I mean, yeah. And it doesn't help that America, the culture of America is like, man, you shouldn't need anything, ever. And the only emotion you can feel is anger. So, like, I mean, a lot of us are trained not to ask for it. Like, that's what it means to be strong.
And strong is important. But the meek are going to inherit the earth, but you better be strong. You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and then I will also say, always listen to prayer requests, right? I remember when I was in seminary, like, we were sure, this actually came out in, I played D&D at seminary, which I love because, like, that's where I learned D&D. Obviously, this is, you know, 20 years after the Satanic Panic. Actually, 30 years, but, like, of D&D. But, I started playing, and I was like, this is really funny. Like, this, you know, it's a bunch of seminarian nerds who are growing up to be pastors, and we got really close playing D&D, right? And we shared prayer requests, and I remember one of the people saying, like, I'm really lonely. And it's really easy to be like, oh, great, I'll pray for you. And then I was like, well, why don't you just come over to my house once a week for coffee? Like, because so often we hear a prayer request and we don't, like, respond. Like, we're like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll pray for you. But it's like, hey, actually, I can actually do something for you, right? Like, and sometimes it's small things. Like, when you talk about, like, being sick, you know, it's like, I mean, a lot of people always offer, like, oh, do you need anything, right? And it's like, in today's world, no, if I really need something, I'll have it delivered, right? Or, like, you know, it's because we don't really want to ask for things, and a lot of times people are saying that because, like, they want to feel good about themselves, right? Do you need anything? I can stop by, right? And, like, really, you're thinking, they don't need anything, it's fine, it's a free ask, right? But, like, you know, like, what is a blessing to you when you're sick, right? You know, maybe it's... Like, I know Luke and Vlad really like cards, not to say necessarily when they're sick, but, like, that's encouragement for them. Or, like, hey, I'm sending you soup from Panera because I know you're sick and not feeling well and you shouldn't have to cook. And I'm not saying you need to do that every time because, like, people get whatever. My point being is sometimes you also have to just take the initiative, right? When I took a class in seminary called Ministering to Women in Pain, one of the things it talked about is, like, everyone always likes to say, what can I do? Instead of saying, like, but it's usually more helpful if you say, like, I can do this, would it be helpful? Right? Like, because especially if someone is grieving, I don't know what needs to be done. Like, the laundry still needs to be done. The dishes still need to be done. But I'm not going to ask, you know, like, and it's overwhelming. So, I really just want to encourage you to think about who you need to give, but also what do you need? And don't be afraid to ask for it. Because no one who goes to church should be lonely and in need of companionship or in need of food or in need of water or clothing or whatnot. So, my last, like, showing the world Jesus means living like you believe he exists. That's, like, the big overarching theme, I would say, for this whole month. Is living like you believe he exists.